Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of Inside the Ropes here on the main feed. My name is Kenny McIntosh. It's Friday evening. I hope you're all getting ready for the weekend. I'm here with Sondra, and we are here to talk about some great wrestling, and we're here to talk about some baffling decisions, and we're here to talk about the fact that Macaulay Culkin is no longer going to Tampa. Lots to cover. Hi, Sondra.
I just saw that tweet that he said he canceled his trip to Tampa Bay, and then Goldberg was like, what did he say? What was the
called
response?
Him a dork.
It's like cool dork or something. Amazing. Amazing. I'm really looking forward to Revolution, Kenny. And I get to go to Black Label Pro tomorrow. So you know what? Wrestling's still my favorite.
Yeah. Well, there's the thing is, I mean, I know that it's like the everybody's just like, you know, hashtag let's be angry. There is a lot of fun stuff to get excited about outside of WWE and inside WWE. You know, we've got the big SmackDown show tonight. There's the rumor of who the interference is going to be, and I think it's going to be Killer Cross. I assume that's who it's going to be, because I can't really think of anybody else.
They're doing like Taz things, right? Is that
what I've seen?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So I assume that's him. And then there is this weird part of me, and I know it's maybe not the right thing. I am fascinated by the reaction that Goldberg is going to get in Boston tonight.
It's going to be like something.
And then obviously we've got Revolution tomorrow, and then on Monday we've got Raw with Beth Phoenix, who's going to be there to give a medical update to Edge, and we know that's probably going to lead to some shenanigans. If he RKOs her, I will die. It will be so good.
Oh man, I will boost so hard. I want it. Like, I want it. I do.
But there is so much stuff going on, and I you know, we do plug it here and there, but I wanted to plug it genuinely because I think this is the right time. Patreon is the place to be, everybody, after you've listened to this podcast, because there is so much content coming out this weekend. We have the No Way Out 2000 review with Finn, Sondra, and I, which is one of the best reviews that we've done, I think, for a really good conversation, really different tangents we go off into, covering that show, the retirement, in inverted commas, of Mick Foley.
What was it that I baffled Finn on? Was it my love for Mark Henry versus Viscera? Was that when he
I
went
think
silent?
So. Yeah, just utter silence. So
cool,
there's that.
Podcasting with Finn. It's
but it's like an hour and 40 minutes of us talking about that show. Finn and I, there's a person I'm over on that's just gone up where Finn and I go into a full analysis of Super Showdown. There's also going to be right after Revolution, I'm recording an Over to You where basically I'm reviewing Revolution with David. So we'll be back together. Then on Sunday, Sondra and I are going to do an overrun where we talk about the big happenings from kind of SmackDown and what's going on. And Sondra can tell us about Black Label Pro. And then on Monday or Tuesday, there'll be the
guys. I get to see that match live. I'm so excited.
Exciting times. Then on Monday or Tuesday, Retro ITR will be out. We have all the fallout from No Way Out 2000 and the build to WrestleMania 2000. And then on Tuesday or Wednesday, Sondra and I are doing the early shift next week. So we'll be talking about Revolution, the fallout from that, Raw, what's been happening. So plenty of stuff coming up to get you excited and get you into what's going on. But before we talk about AEW and NXT, which I know we usually do here on our main podcast, I do need to bring up Super Showdown.
Of course.
Bring up the result. So I maintain in my mind that it's not really the decision that everybody should be angry at, it's the execution of it. Because you can make decisions and write really good stuff and make it work. But they didn't do that here in any way. They just had 3 minutes of spear, 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 spear. Would you describe the finishing move that Goldberg used to pin the Fiend as a jackhammer, Sondra?
No. No, I would not. Because a jackhammer requires you to, like, lift someone up vertically and then kind of twist them down, right? This just, it looked more like a body slam, power slam situation. He just picked him up and threw him down. That's it. It was just a move. Just a normal move in a wrestling match. that pinned the Fiend, who has, you know, kicked out of curb stomp after curb stomp, who's kicked out of Daniel Bryan's finishing moves.
11 curb stomps.
11 curb stomps. One of the most protected finishes in WWE history. Yep, that's accurate.
So I wanted to ask you, because you're a kind of good person to get a gauge on, because you're not like a hardcore WWE loyalist, but you are a fan of some of the stuff that they do, and you watch it here and there. Break down how you feel about it. Is it the end of the world? Is it not? Could the Fiend be rebuilt? Where does this leave Goldberg? Is this a good sign for WrestleMania? Is WrestleMania lost? Break it all down for me.
I mean, I don't think it's the end of the world. I think the world, maybe the world's not going to be fine. Look at the state of the world. But, like, wrestling's going to be fine, right? Like, there's enough other wrestling to love. Wrestling's going to be okay. WWE is not in my favorite place that it has ever been in right now. Can the Fiend be rebuilt if they want to rebuild the Fiend? But having him lose in that manner at the hand of Goldberg does not fill me with confidence that they want to rebuild the Fiend, because we've been here before with Bray Wyatt, right? I went through years of heartbreak with Bray Wyatt. And I feel like that's why I'm less angry about it. Like, 5 years ago, I would have been raging about this. 5 years ago, I did rage about this when it happened with The Undertaker, right? But I feel like we've been here before, and so it's that familiar heartbreak. It's like, I kind of said on Twitter that WWE, for me, has become like that friend that you know is an asshole. And they're fun. Like, they're fun to party with sometimes when they're a good time, and you have fun, and you go out, and you drink, and you have merriment or whatever. But you know that they're an asshole, and you know that they're always going to put themselves first, and you know that they're not going to be there for you. So when they're back on their bullshit, sometimes you just need to leave their texts unread and separate for a while, you know? And I've gotten to a point in my life where I can't be responsible for WWE's bad behavior and let it affect me emotionally quite as much. So, call me again when Becky Lynch gets punched in the face or something and something cool happens. Like, we're just going to have to go our separate ways for a little while.
It all but is confirmed that it's going to be John Cena and The Fiend at WrestleMania. If it is John Cena and The Fiend, and they do a story of kind of, you know, where did it all start going wrong for him, Cena, and he beats Cena at WrestleMania, is that a rebuild worthy of being okay again?
Yeah, it can be. And it depends how they tell that story, right? Like, I think that John Cena versus The Fiend is actually the perfect one to do it if you're going to have The Fiend win in a convincing manner. And, you know, still rebuild him as the big scary thing. Losing once doesn't ruin someone, right? Like, I don't like that idea that getting pinned once is going to ruin a character and going to, like, bury them into the ground forever. I think people are prone to hyperbole about that. I think what gives me hesitation is just, you know, this company's consistent pattern when it comes to Bray Wyatt specifically, but also a lot of newer stars that I grew to love and pour my heart out to. And then they just, you know, they kind of get shafted, and they don't want anyone to feel that big, right? Like, they don't want anyone to be bigger than the company. They don't want anyone to feel like they're above WWE as a hashtag brand. So, and that's fine. That's their decision. They can do that. That's fine. It just means that WWE and I are just not meant to be together sometimes.
Well, I mean, it's like what I was saying, right? It's not really the decision to have The Fiend lose the title. That's not really the issue.
Oh, the execution of it was terrible. Like, I hadn't seen it until, like, 1 minute before we started recording. Kenny sent me a couple tweets to just show me the execution of it, because I'd read about it. I read the results. And honestly, like, it's bad. Like, it's really bad. Like, Goldberg looked maybe mildly inconvenienced by the mandible claw that's taken out so many top superstars. And I think part of the problem, too, is I've been following Goldberg's appearances on SmackDown just a little bit, and he hasn't treated The Fiend seriously this whole time, right? So the story that Goldberg didn't treat The Fiend seriously, just called him a joke, and then beat him so quickly just kind of proves Goldberg's point, and that's not how you keep your most important star a star. Like, that's just baffling. This is Goldberg acting like John Cena in the worst of the John Cena ways, right? Where John Cena's just like, ha ha ha, you're not really a magical man. You can't see me, and I'm going to Photoshop you and then five knuckles shuffle you to death. Like, that's what this feels like to me, just in Goldberg form. So it's very annoying. Like, trust me, it's very annoying, and I am not happy about it. But it just kind of means, like, okay, this sucks. Maybe I need to take a break. And it's not just Goldberg versus The Fiend that I find incredibly annoying from that show. Like, reading that The Undertaker came out to replace Rey Mysterio, chokeslammed AJ Styles AJ Styles, one of the longest reigning champions in WWE history, AJ Styles, major top guy, AJ Styles, chokeslammed him once without even taking off his jacket and hat and just pinned him? What?
And then there's the Ricochet 90-second thing where he got no offense in.
I mean, that was, like, to be expected. But, yeah, I mean, it's still frustrating, right?
Yeah, I mean, the thing, like, for me, I mean, so, you know, you talked about how hyperbole sometimes can happen. I saw, actually, Mel, one of our listeners, she had pondered something via tweet where she'd said, you know, she doesn't watch WWE, but she was like, I don't understand why everyone who's so mad about it still watches. Like, she was, like, pondering it. And I think the reason is, and she said, unless it's your job, I think that a lot of people who watch WWE get a lot of enjoyment from it, or get enough enjoyment from it that they have it as part of their regular thing, but they're just really pissed off about this thing. I think that's fair, too. I don't think it's, like... Because, I mean, for anybody to go, WWE is just terrible right now, well, that's not true. And the majority of people who are telling you that don't watch it. And they just, like, that's the thing they want to say, and that's fine. But it's, like... I watch all the shows, like I would like to think that people respect my opinion enough that if I say something's worth checking out, it's worth checking out. As if Sandra said to me, "You should check this out," I think that you'd like it. I trust that she knows what I like, and I would go and check it out. Vice versa.
I'm not going to send you a 60-minute Iron Man match because no. Why would I do that? You know?
Yeah, I'm not going to send you the best of the Undertaker. So,
no.
I mean, like you
because
know,
why would you do that?
But at the same time, there is this kind of like, it's this hyperbole of when something bad happens, you know, it's like the snakes come out of the woodwork, which is fine. But like, I'm more interested in having constructive conversations.
Well, yeah, and I think people have every right to be mad about this if they're invested in this character and if they're invested in this product.
Because it's
right?
Bullshit.
Like, because it's absolute bullshit. I mean, like, I don't actually listen back to Inside the Ropes very often, but I was curious last week how ranty I sounded about Velveteen Dream. Turns out very. And I listened back to it, and I was like, I feel like that anger was justified, right? Because NXT, I'm separating NXT from WWE here, I know. I know that they're under the same brand or umbrella, but it feels different, right? And I'm more invested in NXT on a regular basis. Like, I was really angry about Velveteen Dream because I am invested in that show and I am invested in that character. And I felt like they did me dirty by having my baby face be gross, right? I don't have that same level of investment in WWE's main roster, even though there are performers there that I love, even though there are characters there that I've loved for years. But I guess they've just broken my trust enough times that I can't keep going back to them and giving my whole heart to them or whatever. But for people who are still invested in that program and for people who are still invested in that product, you have every right to be pissed because it's bullshit. It absolutely is.
Well,
it's just like me personally, I've had to, you know, separate myself a little bit.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing for me is, like, I think a lot of people lose out in this scenario. I think one of my favorite things that a lot of people have said online, so I can't credit one individual person, was the easiest thing to do here was to have Firefly Funhouse break him out. And
yeah.
He loses. And then you protect the Fiend. They put themselves in a no-win, because apparently the plan up until, like, Monday of this week was Goldberg was going to be fed to the Fiend. That was the plan. And then Vince changed his mind. Dave Meltzer on The Observer said something which I thought was pretty interesting. I kind of agree with it. He said, not since Kane in 1997 have they allowed a heel to be so dominant as The Fiend has in the last 8 months. Like, he has not lost a match. I mean, the Hell in a Cell thing was ropey. But, like, he's won everything. He's beat everybody. He has been made to look so far above everybody else. Mm-hmm. That, like, nobody's on his level. Like, they made him look the fucking dog's bollocks.
He is similar to Kane, actually. That's a good point.
So that's why it feels like... Like, so when, like, what would the example be? When Kane lost... When Kane... It's funny, we did the No Way Out review and you were talking about Hell in a Cell from the King of the Ring in 1998. And you'd said, oh, you know, I know it's King of the Ring, but, you know, Hell in a Cell's all ended members. The irony is that's true because Kane won the title that night and nobody remembers it.
Yeah. Well, and then he lost it the next night, so it wasn't like a long win or anything.
And he lost the next night. But the key is when he lost it the next night, he lost it in a very competitive match. So he, like, Kane didn't feel any less after he'd lost that title to Austin. People were still invested in Kane in the summer of 1998. I think why people
feel...
Well,
he lost it to Steve Austin, not Bruno Sammartino.
Yeah, exactly. But the key is, like, even if he had lost it to Bruno Sammartino, he would have lost it in a competitive 10-minute match where it was like they took all this stuff out of each other. What they did here was, and I, I feel like the mindset was, we're going to give him loads of spears that he kicks out of, and then a jackhammer. The problem was the jackhammer looked shockingly bad. Like, I like Goldberg a lot, and I actually feel he could have done him dirty here, because he's going to his legacy before this, or before the Undertaker match, really was this really great run that he had when he came back. Now it's like people are going to resent him, and I don't know if he's really in his mind knows that tonight in Boston he's probably going to get booed out of the building. And look, maybe as a stroke.
I don't know if he knows, because I mean Goldberg, and I don't know how he'll handle it, because Goldberg takes himself very seriously, right? Like, he wants to be the hero, and he wants to, like, you know, like, he doesn't necessarily want to, like, ruin another character or anything. That's not his motivation. But sometimes I just think he doesn't get it in some ways. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does make sense. The irony is that he never used Goldberg to his potential in his prime, and now when he's 53, they want to use him. But the other thing is, you know, the San Martino thing. If Goldberg's supposed to be the San Martino, well, you wouldn't have San Martino come in and pin Roddy Piper in 2 minutes, because then people would boo San Martino, and you don't want people booing San Martino. He's your legend guy. I've saw a lot of people on Twitter, and I think this is totally fair. Look, The Fiend's not for everybody. Some people don't like the character. The matches, apart from the Daniel Bryan one, have not been very good. Mm-hmm. They haven't. There is an argument he doesn't really work that well, because everybody who he's worked with, like Seth Rollins, ended up having to go heel because the feud with The Fiend necessitated that, like, there was nothing left for Seth Rollins to do. The Miz had to go heel. Daniel Bryan's really the only one, but I mean, now he's, I know you see this as a good thing, but now he's just like doing backstage segments with Drew Gulak in WrestleMania season. So, like, everybody who's worked with Wyatt has been affected in a way where they've kind of had to really change. So I do get the argument if some people go,
I feel like adds to the, like, for me, that's added to The Fiend's character, and that's added to The Fiend's allure, because he has been so mystical that he's had to change all of his opponents. And that's another thing that kind of bugs me, is that Goldberg just beat him so easily, and Goldberg's not going to change. Goldberg's not going to be affected by this.
Well, exactly. But, like, my point more was, like, the people who are not happy about him, right, or don't like him, or think the character's flawed or whatever, even if that's how you feel in WWE, we're like, right, okay, it's not working the way we wanted it to. I saw Michael Sidgwick from What Culture. He was saying, like, you know, Bray hasn't brought any ratings increases in. He hasn't brought any new network subs in. Like, he's not moved the needle in any way. Which, fair. I mean, he sold a shit ton of merch and was a top merch seller. So, like, that is worth
inclusion. I was going to say, loads of merch. Like, that's something.
But I still think, even if you think that way, you go, okay, we want to take the belt off him, there has got to be a better way than this. And with Goldberg, it's like, I really want him to be Goldberg. I really do. But it's more and more, because the other thing is, he's 3.5 years older than he was when he did the last matches. And I think he only had like 3.5 weeks to prep for this. And like, when you're his age, that it's harder to prep for what he has to do.
Well, because I remember him talking for his last run, when he was talking about how much preparation he had to do. He was like, this killed my body again. You know, like, it was hard to prepare for that last run when it was the Goldberg Lesnar time. And, you know, doing it now and with only 3 weeks to prep, that's not easy.
I think, is The Fiend recoverable? Yes, but they do need to take a serious look at, because again, I don't have any problem with AJ Styles losing to The Undertaker on last night's show, or Ricochet losing to Brock Lesnar, or The Fiend losing to Goldberg. The point is, the execution of all three was terrible. Like, The Undertaker, like, just on a sort of aesthetic level, why is he doing a choke slam in his hat and jacket?
I mean, that just screams that he doesn't care about this, right? Because he's The Undertaker, and he's going to win, and he's going to collect his paycheck, and he's going to go home. That doesn't make you invested in a character.
But then the irony is that, you know, the story is that Taker really wants to work with AJ because he wants to have a good match. It's like, but do you, like, don't you want to have a good story? Because to me, I'm not more invested in the Undertaker-AJ story after that. Like, one choke slam does not a story make.
No.
And then poor Ricochet, God bless him. I mean, imagine being that guy and the thing is, look, I get that he's going to be on social media and be like, you know, oh, some fans just don't get it. And it's like, well, no, some do. some do get it. I'm sorry that that's not positive to you right now. But, like, he's got to know deep down that it was bullshit and that the whole real life superhero thing's bullshit as well. So,
Of
but
course. I mean, he can't say that publicly, of course. Like, he's never going to, but I'm sure he knows. He's not stupid.
I've even seen like staunch, WWE supporters, like Gorilla Position podcasts and stuff, who are very company line, very down on it and everything. And I just think it's maybe we get to the end of WrestleMania and Roman wins the title and it's a big thing. Wyatt beats Cena, it's a big thing. That's all very well and good. My point is just like, how is 27 writers or whatever, and Vince and all these people, and these are the executions of the finishes? Like,
I mean, do you feel like they thought nobody's watching this show anyway, so it doesn't matter? Because, I mean, that's kind of how I treat Saudi shows. Like, I just sort of put them to the back of my mind because I'm not going to watch them, and they're sort of out of canon, but they are in canon because, like, title changes have happened now. But, eh. So maybe they were just like, well, nobody likes the fact that we're in Saudi Arabia. Nobody really wants to watch it. We can just kind of do whatever, which is
me.
a terrible way to go about it, but would that make sense? Because they're like, these shows are normally terrible anyway, why try?
Maybe, yeah, maybe. Maybe that is the mindset. Because I can't come up with a good idea. I mean, I said to Ollie yesterday when we were watching it, I was like, it just feels very soulless. Like, the production is amazing, the pyro is out of this world. I mean, it looks amazing, but there's just no soul to it. Because, like you say, it's just like we all just want to get through the Saudi shows. We always want to get past them every time. It's like, oh, there's a Saudi show coming.
And maybe
But
they
I.
do too. How was my new favorite wrestler, Big Mansoor?
Fine. I mean, the match with Ziggler was just very, very average. I think, like, I mean, I'm overhearing that he loves being from Saudi Arabia and he wants to make everybody proud. Like, good, but can we do something now? Like, you can only do so many exhibition matches when before. Oh, by the way, can I tell you a rumored match for WrestleMania that was in the Observer this week? I don't know how you're gonna feel about it, so I felt like on-air reaction was good. One-on-one at WrestleMania will be Dolph Ziggler
Boo.
versus Otis.
WrestleMania.
With Mandy Rose involved somehow.
Not at Elimination Chamber, at WrestleMania.
At WrestleMania.
Amazing. Amazing. Good for Otis, man. Good for Otis. I love him. I love Otis Dozovich. He's amazing. Like, he's so good.
He's very funny. He is very, very funny.
I really hope they don't do him dirty like they did Rusev, because like he's a similar guy to me, where he's like he's really good in the ring, he's super fun, he's super over because he's charismatic and connects with the crowd. Like, use that. Use him as a character. He's great. And
So
the
yes,
Otis and Mandy story is one of the best stories that they're telling right now.
well, yeah, we'll be talking about that on Sunday on our overrun. So do check that out over on the old Patron. So let's talk about NXT first before we talk about AEW. But I mean, yeah, I'll talk about NXT first. So,
It happened. It was a show.
like, the problem with going head to head with another promotion and being like, right, we're gonna go out there and we're gonna put ourselves head to head. You can't do that while being a half developmental show, half main roster show. Like, they don't know what they want to be, and they keep trying to be multiple things, and I feel like it's just not really clicking that well.
I feel like it was working a lot better months ago, and they've fallen off some sort of cliff. Like, how was TakeOver Portland that good and the two shows after it so bad?
It's
Like, they weren't
baffling.
bad, they were fine. Like, perfectly fine wrestling programs if you just want to see the wrestlers. Perfectly fine. There's nothing, like, wrong with it. Well, there is something wrong with Velveteen Dream being gross and creepy, and he was less creepy about families
They
and Melina this week, which
seem
was
to have
good.
dropped that.
Good.
Yeah, they seem
Because
to have
I'm
dropped it,
here
which
for
is
like
good. They're
Velveteen Dream
listening.
just being like, you broke my back, I'm pissed, let's fight. Like, that's a good story to me. I want to sex your wife more efficiently than you is not a good story to me.
Okay, so let's quickly go through NXT because it's not really that interesting. We had Dominik Dijakovic against Cameron Grimes. Cameron Grimes got a big win because Damian Priest, who legitimately could be anything between 25 and 49 years old, I don't know which, I feel like he would just beat a Guns N' Roses gig and has been. I feel like he's like, you would see him in Rock of Ages. He'd like the Russell Brand character in Rock of Ages.
Yeah.
But anyway,
I mean, I've not seen it, but I'm familiar with the concept.
Cameron Grimes gets the win with the distraction.
Well, it wasn't just a distraction. Damian Priest attacked Dominik Dijakovic.
Yeah, he attacked him, which allowed for Cameron Grimes to get the win with his finish. Steve Gunn was because I was like on my phone during the match because like Dominik Dijakovic matches, they're just not my jam. Mm-hmm. I found it very difficult to get invested. And he was like, "How are you gonna get more invested in if you don't watch his matches?" And I was like, "I'll get more invested when I see a character. I know he's a good wrestler." Like, there is nowhere in any podcast you'll hear me dispute that he's a good wrestler. Nowhere. I get it. I need character. And if I don't get it, I'm just kind of bored.
I think some of his character does come through his matches, but this one was... This is just a weird situation, I think, because I like the idea of Dominik Dijakovic being away from Keith Lee, like I said before. So when he came out and did that promo... I don't even think we talked about it last week, but when he was like, "I want one more chance at you because I had you beat and you know it, but then I lost, so I didn't." And I didn't really understand what he was on about because Keith Lee was like, "But dude, I won." And he did. He was correct. So the whole thing is kind of strange, but I understand Dominik Dijakovic wanting one more shot because he and Keith Lee have been so evenly matched. Cameron Grimes has been good at wrestling and wears a hat, so I guess he also gets to try to be number one contender. Which is fine. I don't mind that. He's good. But I don't really understand why Damian Priest attacked Dominik Dijakovic here. Because later on, he's with his ladies. Because that's a thing that he does. I don't really understand where a lot of these pieces fit. But apparently Damian Priest likes to have ladies, which is fine. And he gets interviewed outside outside of Full Sail. And he was like, "Dominik Dijakovic has been standing in my way. Like, he has been standing in the way of something that I want." But it doesn't necessarily make sense, because if this match was for the number one contendership for the North American Championship, now Cameron Grimes is just getting a title shot. Like, why does Dominik Dijakovic having a title shot matter to you more than Cameron Grimes having a title shot? If you want a title shot, you should probably be going after Keith Lee or doing anything to get your name in that conversation. Like, why Dominik Dijakovic specifically? There's still another guy in your way.
Yeah, all valid points. I do want to give them credit. I thought the way they did the Priest attack and then Cameron Grimes getting the win was kind of like clever. Like, it was clever to give Cameron Grimes a win.
It seemed like they were going to go with Dominik Dijakovic again after the promo from last week. So it was surprising to see Cameron Grimes get the win. It does extend the story. It's just some of the pieces don't fit.
I mean, I would argue that I'm more interested in Cameron Grimes, but that's just because, like, he has a hat and seems to have some personality. And, like, I can see some...
I love that we're both, like, he has a hat, but, like, it makes a difference, right?
It does. But that's the thing, like, with Dijakovic, it's like, he's a great pro wrestler. He can do things that are amazing, but he's a guy in shorts. That's kind of the extent of it. And, like, a waistcoat and a hat... I don't know why that's more interesting, but it is. So,
Mr. Sandra anyway. Thinks he looks like he should be a roadie for Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Oh, 100%. 100%. So, so that was fine. I mean, a lot of the show was just kind of filler. We had... my favorite part of the show, by a country mile, we had Finn Balor come out. He was doing a promo where he was talking about, you know, he builds brands, Japan, Mexico, IC title, Universal title, NXT title. This is the other thing about, like, you know, kind of ties into the Fiend thing, is that now being a WWE fan means that you kind of have to ignore stupid booking. Like, you have to just ignore
yes.
it. Like, you have to ignore that Finn Balor was a massive failure in the main roster. You have to ignore that and just say, he was Universal Champion, done it, Intercontinental Champion, done it. Like, you have to ignore a lot of stuff.
And he's cool now, so let's focus on that. Just like... The dream has no memory of the rest.
Like, because like Walter's the NXT UK champion, but I just can't shake seeing him jobbed out of Survivor Series in 3 minutes. Like, that's just very hard for me to ignore. But, you know, Balor talks about it being WrestleMania season. He's been his peak for 20 years. Who's going to get that Finn rub? And then comes the Symphony number 9. It is Eichner and Bartel from Imperium. Walter's sending his regards. Balor takes them out, and then they basically, beat him up and stand tall. I hadn't thought about Finn Balor versus Walter, but now I'm like, yes, that could be great. So this was my favorite thing on the show by a mile.
Well, I mean, because when is the UK takeover Dublin
It's not in the
situation?
UK. Yeah, that's
No, I
on
know.
April the 26th or something. So I'm assuming we're going to get them in Tampa and then get a return leg in Dublin.
Okay, because it makes sense if you're building to a show in Dublin, right? Then to have Finn Balor versus Walter is the biggest match you can have for that. So that makes tons of sense to me.
Well, also, if you don't have an NXT Women's Championship match at TakeOver Tampa, then, an
Having a UK
NXT.
title match makes sense.
Yeah, it's a big match. And the other, I was also thinking about it during this segment. I was thinking about like NXT UK could be the best show in the world, and I've heard it's good, but it's like we're never going to be able to make time for it. There's just
No.
so much going on. So the problem is going to be Walter does feel he could walk into any part of WWE and kind of have dream matches with people. And maybe there's a couple others. I mean, but now Pete Dunne's in NXT US, but there's not a lot of guys. Like Jordan Devlin is a great wrestler, but like he doesn't feel like he's on anywhere near a level. Like
Well, he's
Walter
doing
feels
his cruiserweight thing, so he can build a different story.
exactly. But like, as much as I love Joe Coffey or Gallus, like, they don't feel like if they turned up, it's a big deal. And I don't know how you make them a big deal by them being on a brand that. What we always tend to do is watch the takeovers a couple of times a year and go, oh my God, that was great, but with no intention to watching any more of it. So I don't know how they fix that problem, but for now, Walter is the absolute da, so good for him.
Yeah, no, this is great. And sending his mercenaries and still not showing up, that's like peak Walter, right?
Peak Walter. So if they battle in Tampa, I am all for it. And
I'm here for it too. Like, that sounds great. I would love to watch Finn Balor versus Walter. That sounds like a fantastic plan. And it's interesting because Finn Balor's been such a dickhead, right? Like, such a dickhead in NXT, but he kind of, like, he's been getting cheered, so it seems like he is not necessarily the bad guy in the situation. Like, he was sympathetic because it was 2-on-1.
Yeah, I mean he's going baby face for this program. Does he go baby face long term? We don't know. There's lots of questions. Now we're not going to cover everything on NXT, but I did want to bring up that Tommaso Ciampa had a match with Austin Theory, who is fine. I didn't really understand why Austin Theory is here and what the deal is, but that's
Well,
fine.
because he was supposed to fight him last week and didn't, and Austin Theory got pushed down, and so now they're fighting again.
Yeah, no, but what I mean is I just don't understand, like, who is he in the canon of the show? Do you know what I mean? Like,
A
he's like an,
wrestler.
he's, yeah, but like,
Just
but
like
he's
everyone
not,
else, he's a
but like,
wrestler.
I'm, but I'm not interested. I don't know who, he's just, like, he didn't, it, I don't want to see Tommaso Ciampa against an Evolve guy. I'd like to see him against somebody who I know, or, like, somebody who feels like a star.
Well,
So just
I
for,
think the point is that they're trying to bring people in and make them into names. Like they've been doing a little bit more of that lately, which feels maybe a little bit more de developmental and a little more like star building. And I'm a lot more willing to grant that than you probably, because I'm
yeah,
like, yay,
that's fair.
new people. Whereas you're like, I want to see the established names, but you can't get more established names and make new stars without introducing these people into the world. So I think bringing in Austin Theory to face Tommaso Ciampa makes sense to me, because then you see him have a good match on NXT and you go, oh, maybe I would like to see more of this person wrestle. Like, NXT is not a show aimed at you. It's
No.
very much more aimed at people like me who just want to watch the wrestling. The problem for me is that I have so much good wrestling to watch that, like, when NXT isn't full of my very favorite people, then I just kind of want to watch elsewhere. But
Well, I mean, the thing with Austin Theory is I feel like Austin Theory is a guy who should definitely be doing the Florida shows and stuff. And then I would just like to see him introduced as a he, I think it's because, and we've talked about this before, I don't handle well the idea of like I don't know who you are and I don't know what you're doing here. Like I don't know are you part of the roster? Are you just being brought in for a one shot? Like it doesn't work as well for me. But he was good enough in the match. He was fine. Like I saw him in that when we watched those Evolve matches for that show. It was coincidentally on the network the same night as the AEW pay-per-view.
I mean, strange
The
coincidence that.
strange. Also, there's an Evolve show on tomorrow night. Actually,
Oh, is there?
stream free, head-to-head with nothing.
Huh, strange. Strange that
Anyway,
again.
so the thing is, what really made me angry, you were ranting last week with Velveteen Dream, so. There has been a failed Johnny Gargano heel turn that has happened. We are all aware this has happened. They just forgot about it. So Johnny Gargano had this massive heel turn at Portland. He then wasn't on the show last week, and then this week, he basically all but did
an thing.
No, he all but did an Undertaker Triple H stare at the sign, but with a bit of physicality.
Yeah.
He beat up.
You know exactly how to make my blood boil, Kenny.
Wait,
hate
but
that
he like
hate it.
He beat up Ciampa and then just like beat him up to the area where the NXT's now, I guess, version of the sign is, and he just looked at the Tampa Bay logo and looked at Ciampa and looked at Tampa Bay and looked at, and I was like, cut a fucking promo.
And he's so good at promos. What even are they doing? I don't understand.
I'm just like, what are you doing? Like, rest.
I mean, I like the sarcastic clap. I like him just being like, I'm super pissed, but I would really like to hear about it. And like, have someone try to talk to him. Why have none of these reporters who mill about backstage Full Sail, who mill about like near the locker room area, outside the building? There are reporters everywhere. It's one of my favorite tropes of NXT is all of the press conferences that happen. And no one has tried to ask Johnny Gargano a question.
WrestleMania season, TakeOver Tampa Bay. You want to build this big rematch of guys who have headlined multiple TakeOvers. One of them turned on the other at a TakeOver. It is a big, long story. So funnily enough, the fucking audience want to hear why he turned. And they don't want him to do WrestleMania sign-pointing NXT version.
No. No, we don't. Like, I'm so invested in these characters, right? Like, I'm invested in Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano. And again, like, I understand Johnny Gargano's motivation, if indeed it's his motivation, because we don't know because he hasn't told us. But I am invested in Johnny Gargano telling me why Tommaso Ciampa deserved this. And he kind of does, right? Because Tommaso Ciampa fucked over Johnny Gargano and wouldn't get out of his head for a year and cost Johnny Gargano everything. He was the best man. Like, he can't even look at his own wedding photos anymore because of that cretin. That's the kind of stuff I want to hear, but we're not hearing it because they're supposed to. I think they're going for mystery and allure and spreading it out, but like there's a point where you just wait too long and then I'm just going to be annoyed with you, you know, and I'm kind of there right now. Like,
well, also
hear him say stuff. He's good at saying stuff.
I know that JR said in his interview with Finn on Patreon that you know, oh, there's
for
no
a second,
Wednesday.
I thought you meant Balor, and I was like, what?
there's no like Wednesday night war, and that might be the case, right? But the reality is, there's two big shows on a Wednesday night, and you should be aiming to be the best show on that night. You don't have to watch what the other ones do, but you just need to aim to be the best. I don't believe this is anywhere near the best that they could be doing with Ciampa and Gargano. And the other thing is, because Ciampa and Gargano have had so many matches, you almost have to work harder to hook people because, you know, there could be a kind of, some people, I'm not saying I do, but some people might feel it's a bit samey, you know, mm-hmm. Seen it before.
Because we've seen it before.
Seen it before.
I mean, we haven't seen it before in this situation, if Johnny Gargano is meant to be the heel here.
Yeah, the roles are reversed.
But
like,
told that.
Yeah, we, like, and, like, to me, if he had done this last week, maybe that's okay, because he was there, and, you know, I did say I wanted to see him do extreme acts of violence. To be honest, I would, you know, you said, oh, you know, a reporter can help him. Have him beat up a fucking reporter because he's so mad that he's asked the question. Like, yeah. Do something where it doesn't feel like you know who it is and you're kind of shaken by who this Johnny Gargano is and, like, why is he all of a sudden being this arsehole? And maybe you have Candice LeRae being asked about, I know you hate it, but, like, have Candice LeRae be asked and she's like, I just don't know what's going on. Like, have her planting doubt in you as well. Like, there's so much stuff you can, you have all these toys to play with and these tools to tell stories with. Just use them.
I mean, NXT feels kind of flat and soulless right now, which is crazy to me. Like, Portland was so good, and I was so excited for everything coming out of that show, and it feels very paint by numbers. It's very, like, it's incredibly disappointing, because NXT is a show that I like. Like, and they're not doing everything wrong. Like, Xia Li getting a surprise win over Mia Yim because Reina Gonzalez and Dakota Kai came out and distracted her or whatever. Like, it was a distraction roll-up, and I'm not a huge fan of distraction roll-ups, but, like, you know, you're telling a story there. You can get Xia Li versus Mia Yim again if you want. You can do stuff there. I'm assuming we're going to get a tag team match because Xia Li kind of, like, attacked Dakota and Reina afterwards. And, like, that's fine. Like, that is fine pro wrestling storytelling. It's logical. It makes sense. But it doesn't really feel like it has a lot of life to it. And NXT is a show that normally feels like it has a lot of life to it. Like, I was out of my seat for Portland. And I don't get that excited about arena shows anymore. And, like, I was out of my seat for, you know, like, a big production wrestling thing, and it was kind of exciting to be excited. And now they're just, I don't know. Do they think, like, hey, we did a good job, we don't have to try anymore for a while because people like us so much? Like, that's just not true. There's so much wrestling to watch, and if yours isn't very interesting, then I'm going to look elsewhere.
Well, also, the other thing is that this is the one time where, like, so usually they have a takeover at Royal Rumble and then they have a takeover at WrestleMania. That's the balance. Now they have a month less to tell the stories because, you know, there's only a month. And the length of the show doesn't matter because you're only going to do so many things each week. Mm-hmm. So you basically only have, like, five episodes. So if this was happening in a Rumble takeover, maybe I can understand the idea of, well, we've got, like, 8 weeks, so we're telling a long story. It's like, we've got like 4 weeks or 5 weeks. Yes. Now, whatever it is. So yeah, just I was baffled by it. But like you say, we did get we got a promo from Velveteen Dream where he basically went completely, you know, you broke my back, I want you in a cage. And I felt warm and fuzzy about the Velveteen Dream again. I was happy to be back to that mind frame.
Yeah, no, it was good. Like, I mean, I still have a grudge. I'm still annoyed with him. I still do not appreciate his comments and actions. I'm trying to get past it. I'm trying to do that thing where I just, like, forget about the bad parts of a story and enjoy the good parts so that I don't hate everything. Because I don't want to hate everything. It's NXT. It's normally good and happy and fun, and I like it. Right now is I'm annoyed with NXT right now. I'm very annoyed. It has disappointed me. But, yeah, like, it'll be interesting to see Velveteen Dream and Roderick Strong in a cage. I hope that they have a better match than they did last week, because that'd be great. NXT is going to be weird next week, right? It's like NXT Lockdown or No Way Out or Cage Central. I don't know. It's strange because we have Dakota Kai and Tegan Nox in a cage match, and we have Roderick Strong and Velveteen Dream in a cage match. Can we just put Xia Li and Mia Yim in a cage too? Like, is that what we're going to do? Is it just going to be all cages all the time?
A lot of cage stuff. I mean,
for a two-hour show, two cage matches is significant.
You know, they're trying to combat AEW. And I mean, AEW is going to have the fallout from Revolution and all that kind of stuff. So I guess the idea is, you know, we'll load it with two cage matches. This week they had Charlotte Flair, so that was their attempt this week. So it'll be kind of interesting to see how they continue to try and combat that. But I mean, if you keep doing shows like this, you're never gonna win a week. I mean, like, it's just not gonna happen. But
it was all building to Charlotte versus Bianca, right? And I thought Charlotte's character work throughout the show was pretty good, like her coming in a limo and making William Regal open the door for her like an absolute cunt. Like, she's just horrible.
she was great on that. She was great. She was great at points. I should mention very quickly, the Forgotten Young Sons are patriotic American babyfaces.
You just called them the Forgotten Young Sons.
Did I? Oh, Forgotten, yes. Sons. They're not young.
Just made me laugh so much harder.
The Forgotten Sons.
But yeah, the Forgotten Sons are now
maybe I'll just start calling them the Forgotten Young Sons so they've got a bit.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I don't understand. How are the Forgotten Sons supposed to be babyfaced now? How, I ask you? It doesn't make sense. I mean, I understand that the Grizzled Young Veterans are dastardly and bad. And the Forgotten Sons, I almost just said Forgotten Young Sons too.
Just go with it.
The Forgotten Young Sons, I mean, two out of three of them are legitimate veterans of the United States Armed Forces. So I understand going with that as a thing. And if you want to go that way, that's fine. But it's kind of come out of nowhere. And they haven't even really, like, explained that Jackson Ryker and Steve Cutler are veterans in a very long time. Like, they've really not mentioned that on screen in a very long time. So if I don't know those people and I don't know their history, then I'm probably just like, what? Like, are you just fighting for the troops? Like, you are the troops, but
go troops.
What? Troops. I mean, the crowd did chant USA. It felt,
again, I mean, the
it
thing
felt
is,
paint by numbers. It felt as low effort as possible.
Is there an easier chant to get than people who live in the US saying USA? My lord.
Yeah, probably.
So
not.
Easy. Like, yeah. Anyway.
Only time I chant USA, I have like one instance where I will chant USA, and it is for American Beetle in Kaiju Big Battle, because he's the American Beetle, but he only speaks Spanish.
That makes sense. Well, it's a little fun character riff thing. Yeah.
Yeah, which is great. Sense. And so 100% I will chant for a USA where Spanish is accepted as a first language.
So, but obviously, the whole show led to the main event, which was Bianca Belair versus Charlotte Flair. So it was Bianca Belair, Charlotte Flair, and I was kind of expecting this to be great. It was good. It wasn't great. But
Yeah.
the problem with the whole thing was it was fine. It was a decent match. I loved Bianca's promo earlier in the show where she was outside talking sass about Charlotte. Like, she's just my fave. I love her.
Oh, she's
But
awesome.
they must have got the call that, you know, we are running out of time and we have 2 minutes left on the show. So Charlotte beats, just comes back and does natural selection kind of out of nowhere. Because, you know, Bianca was in the Boston Crab. I think it was the Boston Crab. Am I imagining this? Yeah, she was the Boston Crab. And then, you know, she kind of got out. She was fighting back, and she did a spear to Charlotte. And, you know, they were building to whatever the finish was going to be, and it went right to natural selection. And it just kind of felt a bit like out of nowhere. But I was kind of okay. Well, you know, sometimes a move comes out of nowhere and that beats you, and that's wrestling. I can go with it. And then within the space of like 1 minute, maybe even shorter, Charlotte brings a chair out of the ring. Rhea Ripley's music starts. Charlotte cleverly did not stop because, oh my God, it's entrance music and I must freeze.
Right.
Did the
Even after all
Pillmans.
that time on the main roster, she still, hasn't succumbed to the musical distraction.
So she puts puts the chair on the leg, does the Austin Pillman gimmick. She does it, and the worst thing about it was that Rhea Ripley, who is meant to be coming out to make the save for Bianca Belair, who is part of NXT. So we are NXT. So we are against this, you know, nepotism hire of Charlotte Flair, who got everywhere because of her name.
Established in that great segment weeks ago before the Portland Cliff.
Exactly. Before the Portland Cliff. So Rhea, as Charlotte Flair is trying to destroy Bianca Belair's leg, does her full entrance and looks like a fucking idiot.
I mean, if you could see me right now, I'm just throwing my hands up in the air going, "What? When did NXT turn into the main roster? When did that happen? Why did that happen?" I'm so frustrated by this. Like, the match frustrated me too, just because, like, Bianca and Charlotte is something that I've wanted for a long time, and it was awesome, like, in theory. And I did like parts of it. Like, I loved Charlotte kind of like drawing a line in the sand beforehand, and Bianca being like, "No, look, bitch, like, I'm gonna come for you." And there was some good drama in the match. There was some good stuff. Like, I like the abdominal stretch that Charlotte had on her, and she used her hair, and Bianca was able to reverse it because she's big and strong. Like, there was some good stuff in the match. It wasn't bad. But then at the end just felt weird and messy. Like, it felt like their timing got off, and Bianca did that spear to Charlotte that Charlotte just, like, completely no-sold. Like, what spear, Bianca? I am main roster Charlotte, and I don't understand you doing a move to me. That doesn't hurt at all. And then Charlotte does a spear and it kills Bianca dead, and she's down for natural selection, and whatever, she loses. Like, I expected Bianca not to beat Charlotte Flair. But yeah, why was Rhea Ripley doing a full entrance when she was meant to, like, come out and save her? And, like, everything was so rushed and crazy that Charlotte still stomps on Bianca's ankle and everything. And Rhea Ripley's just kind of standing there, and then she's mad about it and holds up her title to stare at Charlotte afterwards. And Bianca's just like, "What the fuck? Like, my ankle hurting."
I feel like in wrestling, you gravitate towards people who feel authentic, and Rhea Ripley in that moment was the most inauthentic
And she's
because.
normally very authentic. That's why people gravitate towards her, right? Like, she's a badass. She's awesome. She definitely was the right choice to beat Shayna Baszler. But, like, what does she do? Like, this was a misstep. I don't think this is like Rhea Ripley is dead in the water and
Oh,
this is
no, not
terrible.
at
But,
all.
like, this was a blip. It was not good.
And, you know, it's funny because we talked about Goldberg and Wyatt, and the whole thing is like we knew that Bianca was going to lose, but it's the execution, and I don't think they quite got it. It's like if you look at this, just the example that comes to my mind, it's not because it's like my favorite, but like The Rock and John Cena at 28 was very good, and they found that perfect moment to have Rock kip up and do the Rock Bottom and beat Cena. People went crazy, but 12 months later when they did it at WrestleMania 29, there was a moment in that arena where if Cena had won, people would have went nuts. Properly, and it was great, but they went 2 minutes too long.
Right.
And like when you're, and you can't always get it right, but like they just didn't get the right timing here. Like It just needed a couple more minutes. It needed a couple more minutes of Bianca getting more in. It just it felt that you got the rug pulled out a little bit too soon. So, but you know that can happen. I don't even that is fine. But her doing the full entrance, I was like, what is she doing? I just was so baffled by it. So that was NXT. I mean, it was a pretty tough watch in some ways because it was hard to not skip certain stuff. Which
I had
is...
to pause it before Bianca Belair versus Charlotte because I needed a break. And I wanted to watch that match. That was the one thing I really wanted to see. And I needed a break beforehand. And it like Forgotten Sons Grizzled Young Veterans was actually, it was a good match. It was. It was good. But I'm not going to cheer the Forgotten Sons because America. What? No.
But yeah, so that was NXT this week. But let's talk about AEW.
Bless AEW and its presence in our lives.
AEW Dynamite was a phenomenal show. It was one of their best weeks. I can't remember the last time I watched a go-home show for anything and was this pumped about a card. Like, they had different matches. You know, the main event segment, they had all the different stuff tying into each other. For anyone who questions why Jim Ross is employed, that segment with, you know, the Bucks and Paige and Omega, like, he added that gravitas to that.
Oh, that was great.
They've got a really clever knack of having a lot of people in places where on the surface you might go, well, why do they need Schiavone and JR? Because they're both legendary voices, but they actually both bring really different things to the show. So,
oh yeah, they're very different announcer styles. Like, I mean, I sometimes question whether JR's presence is necessary and whether it's not. He's just not necessarily for me. And I mean, even on Retro, I've said that, like, consistently, mm-hmm. JR is just not necessarily my favorite of announcers. That doesn't mean he's not good. It's just he's not for me all the time. But segments like this interview segment that he had with you know, the tag team contenders, that was awesome. I loved that segment. It reaffirmed my belief in Adam Page being the good guy in all of this, 100%.
So let's go through as much of it as we can. So we open the show with the 30-minute Iron Man match with Kenny Omega and Pac. And it was a great match. It really was. I don't know if I loved it. Like, some people have been saying it was like the best TV match of the last 5 years. I don't know if I'd go that far, but it was really good.
I was curious how you would feel about it because, I mean, they went 30 minutes, not an hour, which was helpful for you, I'm sure.
So helpful. So helpful.
It's still longer, right? Like, it's a longer match than you prefer to watch on TV most of the time. So when I saw you tweet praise for it, I was like, wow, they really did do a good job. I mean, I loved it, but...
Well, you know, I think that the thing where, you know, Omega wins by DQ and then Pac immediately uses that advantage to get his fall, I thought it was really good because it added some stuff. Like, there was points where I was kind of going, they're doing so much stuff, but I know that's just my thing that I'm not massive on. But I thought the big thing coming at this is, like, people will say Kenny Omega is one of the greatest wrestlers of this generation. That may be the case. I think he's very, very good. It's difficult for me. It's like, if you watch a movie, right? If you watch, like, The Godfather. I've never seen The Godfather, the movie. And part of the reason I've never seen it is because I always get told it's the greatest movie ever. So that's such
Kenny
high
Omega things. For you is like The Shining for me.
Yeah, maybe
I like that film. Okay. I understand that it's great. I understand that. I do not enjoy watching it.
I do like Omega. I do like. I like the character. I just don't need to see. But he, you know, he even said in an interview with Meltzer, he was talking about how, like, you know, if I was gonna introduce somebody to me, I would never show them Okada and me. Like, never. Like, it's just that's too much to expect people to want to watch. But mm-hmm. I think when he's put into an American format, I mean, I think he has struggled a lot in AEW. But for me, the big thing I wanted to praise out of this match, because everybody's praising Omega and he deserves praise, is Pac. Like,
he's so good.
He is phenomenal. When he was in WWE, I knew he was good, but I didn't really realize he could be this good. So props to him.
Oh yeah, no, he's incredible. And that was the frustrating thing about him being in WWE was like because I watched Adrian Neville in NXT, like I never watched Pac before NXT, but because I watched Adrian Neville's ascent in NXT and his championship reign, which was great, and then, you know, that match with Sami Zayn where he lost the title was also great. Like I loved Adrian Neville's NXT trajectory there, like before he went to the main roster and just happened. He was great, and I've wanted to see that guy come out. And then when he became the Bastard Pack and he was Cruiserweight Champion again, like you saw glimpses of it, but because it was the Cruiserweight Championship, you didn't see as much of it as you really should have on main roster television because they don't prioritize that title, and he was just kind of on his own show, right? But it was great. Like the stuff he was doing on 205 Live at that point was awesome. So letting him shine and seeing him actually just get to be the Bastard Pack, like it's amazing. It's so good, and it's wonderful as someone who's been a fan of him for a long, long time. It's really nice to just see him unleashed and have the world get to see just how good he is. Because if you only watched him in WWE, then like you're missing out. And it's no wonder he wasn't happy there because they were stifling this.
They were stifling this. You know, I also need to say that the test of how much Orange Cassidy, I like Orange Cassidy and I get a kick out of his gimmick. I didn't know how much Orange Cassidy worked for me until they announced Orange Cassidy and Pac, and I was like, this is brilliant.
I'm so excited.
Because like he has to try, right? Obviously, to make it really good. But
I
that's the
love that
gimmick, right?
Dustin or Chuck Taylor said that in the promo, right? Like he's gonna surprise you guys when he, because next week he's gonna try, and I'm like, oh, I cannot wait. I cannot fucking wait to see the crowd lose their minds over Orange Cassidy because there are so many people who've only seen him in AEW, and he's been great in AEW. They have used him to perfection, I would say. I think he's
They've
been.
built it very well.
They've built it very well. But for people who've never seen a proper Orange Cassidy match, like, hold on to your hats. Like, I hope that they do it properly, and I believe that they will because I have a lot more faith in AEW. And like, and Pac as an opponent to Orange Cassidy, oh man, like, I'm so excited for Pac to not take him seriously and to like wrestle really well and for Orange Cassidy to just like actually pull out what he can do because, oh, it's gonna be so good. Like, I'm like, jumping up and down as I'm sitting here talking about it because it's the thing I'm most excited about next week or on Revolution, I mean.
Wait, I do you know, did you see the big return that we saw on AEW this week?
The big return?
The big return, we finally saw the return of Luchasaurus.
Yes.
Because my God, he has not been moving well for months, and it has been very noticeable. And at the beginning of this match, I said to Steve Gunn, I was like, oh, I really miss Luchasaurus. And then I was like, oh, he's back. Great. Perfect. They had the trios match with Jurassic Express and the Inner Circle, who are now the Painmaker Posse. Sammy Guevara, Santana and Ortiz. The Jurassic Park. Jurassic Park. First time I've made that error, actually. It's been months. That's good. Jurassic Express get the win. But then after the match, well, Darby Allin came out at the end, which obviously helped get the win for the babyfaces. And then Guevara went for Darby Allin. And then, did you see Darby Allin's card bit, or was that during the break?
That was during the break, I think.
So they had Darby Allin doing cards again, which basically was like in 3 days at Revolution, the coffin will drop. I will beat you, blah blah blah. And as he was doing the cards, the crowd were chanting like very loudly, "Darby's gonna kill you, Darby's gonna kill
Yes.
you." So like, you know, even like Darby Allin and Sammy Guevara, which is it's a match, right? But like those two guys were like, when Darby Allin first came in, I mean, that Cody match I think really was a great start for him because he immediately was like, oh, this guy's really interesting. But like, we interviewed Sammy Guevara, and I'll say this now, we walked away from Sammy Guevara at an interview because we were like, I mean, what other content can we get? He's fighting Kip
I think we had
Sabian.
someone else to interview, didn't we? And we were like, yeah, that's more important.
But now it's like he's one of the key guys in AEW. They've built him so well. And he's 23. He is
Yeah.
like him plus 2000 Big Show in WWE equals 2 years younger than the current WWE Universal Champion.
Wow,
That's
that's
math.
baffling. That's baffling. But the thing about Sammy Guevara is that, like, because we did have an interview with him in Vegas. I know that, like, I stayed till the end of one of his press conference segments. I think it was in Vegas. And it was cool because he just loved that he was there. Like, you could tell because, like, obviously Dynamite hadn't started yet. He hadn't really started, like, building his character. But he just was kind of like, this is so cool that I get to be here. And, like, he was really nice about, like, talking to the people after. Like, because, you know, a lot of times people will come and, like, do interviews and then they'll just leave. And that's fine. Like, that's kind of the professional way to do it. He almost, like, he looked like he didn't want to leave because he was just enjoying it. Like, enjoying the moment. And there's something really endearing about that to me. And he, like, he's grown. He's taken every moment on TV to, like, build his character and, like, kind of make the most of it. And I think that shows, right? Like, he's become one of the best parts of Dynamite with his cue cards and just, like, being a great character. And, like, Darby Allin versus Sammy Guevara is, it's not, like, a low card feud, but it's like a mid card feud at this point, right? Like, they are not the main event guys that this show is being built around. But I think AEW is doing a good job of letting these dudes be themselves. And, like, if you're motivated to work hard and, like, get your spot and be an interesting person, they're letting you do that. And I'm interested on it in like every single match on this card, because I think everybody's been built well and it feels very well-rounded.
Yeah, it does. It feels, like I said, I do think it's the best go-home show I've seen in years. I really do. I think it's worth that kind of level of praise for me. We then got Best Friends taking on The Butcher and the Blade, and wouldn't you know it, that Orange Cassidy and the Bunny stole the show here.
Yeah, because they did.
We've got the Bunny putting the glasses on. We've got Cassidy putting the bunny ears on. Meanwhile, we've got the backdrop of Best Friends and Butcher and the Blade having a fun tag match. Did when Tony Schiavone came in the ring, was this on the main show or was this on the break?
When Chuck Taylor cut the promo about Orange Cassidy?
Well, no, there's a bit after that. I don't know if you've seen this.
I don't know.
Okay, so...
Oh, I think I saw a still image of Tony Schiavone wearing the glasses, but I didn't see what happened.
So basically what happened was, and it's, you need to seek out because it's very funny. So okay. Best Friends go to do the hug gimmick of them hugging Orange Cassidy, and at the last second, Tony Schiavone runs in.
Aww.
And does the hug, right, to all of them. And then, like, it pops Orange Cassidy, but he's trying so hard to not let it pop him.
Uh-huh.
And you know, because he never breaks. That's what makes it really funny. And then they put the glasses on Tony Schiavone and he did the half thumb up. It was so good.
I do need to see this for sure, because that sounds right up my alley. I love all of them.
So see, and also see, if you're in the UK, I cannot recommend getting the fight $4.99 thing a month. It is so worth it, because
I like watching the breaks, because on the occasions that version is what is made available to me, I really enjoy the fight version, actually.
Yeah, and it's like, and there's like, we'll get to it for the weigh-in. Anyway, so really fun. There was a four-way women's match with Yuka Sakazaki, Big Swole, Shanna, and Hikaru Shida. Shanna, the Portuguese athlete from France. Anyway, Hikaru Shida gets the win. Oh, this women's division. I mean, it was fine, but it's just not really got any life to it yet. And it's rough.
Yeah, it still really needs to find its feet. Like, I like all of the women in this match. Like, I really do. And I'm pleased with Hikaru Shida, because I do like her quite a bit. Like, as I've seen her on AEW, I like what I've seen from her quite a lot. Big Swole's awesome. Love her. Love her to infinity. Like, love her so much. Shanna, I don't know much about, and she seems fine. And Yuka Sakazaki is just an adorable, magical girl. So, I mean, I like this, but we really need to have the women's division start telling more stories and being more interesting on its own. Kind of like how Dynamite took a while to kind of find its feet as a show, and it's really nailing it. Like, it's really an awesome thing now, but I don't think the women's division is all that exciting or good. And I think that having a champion who wasn't around did not help that. I think having Nyla as champion is going to help that. Like, we saw Chris Statlander and Big Swole kind of face off with Nyla Rose last week, and that was pretty exciting. And I'm looking forward to Nyla Rose versus Chris Statlander on Revolution, but I think they need to start telling more mid-card and, like, secondary women's stories in the division to help the division grow and feel like more of a thing.
I actually think that what they really, you know, people talk about, like, who would you sign or whatever? They need to sign some stars, female stars.
They should have signed Mercedes Martinez.
They should have.
And they didn't.
Because they are so, like, and I know that you were saying that you love seeing the groundswell of a division, right? And that is great to watch. But apart from Nyla, who has obviously got the kind of, you know, she's the beast, she's the champion, there's not a lot. And, like, because there was a countdown special, which I'm going to try and watch tonight, actually, which is supposed to be brilliant, by the way. With, like,
I saw the first bit of it and then realized that, like, I really needed to start watching No Way Out, or I was not going to go to bed. Like,
but apparently they show, like, Jon Moxley train with Randy Couture, like, really fun stuff. But anyway, apparently they do try and explain that Chris Statlander is an alien, and it's very weird. But I, like, for me, if you're going to do that, like, if you're going to say she's an alien, right, you kind of can't be half pregnant with that. You kind of have to either be like, full, this is fucking mental, mm-hmm. or don't do it. Because if you try and portray her as a real athlete who is like, you can't go, well, she's an alien. Like, make her an alien if that's going to be the gimmick. So mm-hmm. I hope they decide what they're going to do. And I'm fine with either. Just make up your mind.
Yeah.
We got a Dark Order video, and they said that Christopher Daniels will find out that the Exalted One is truly obsolete. Did you die? I died.
I died. I basically died. And the thing is, like, the Exalted One is very interesting. Like, it would be kind of fascinating if it isn't Matt Hardy. Like, because, I don't know, like, Lance Archer or Brody Lee. Sorry, Mr. Saundra's leaving. I'm telling him, love you, bye.
Love you, Mr. Saundra.
Kenny loves you, too. But, yeah, so it'd be, like, to me, I think it'd be really interesting if it were Lance Archer, or if it were, like, Brody Lee is my dream, just because, like, of course he is. He's my dream for everything. But they're not saying the word obsolete and then not following through, right? Like, that's...
I could see them doing a
it's
thing
so
where, like...
specific.
I feel like this was them saying that Matt Hardy is going to be in AEW, right? That, because whether he's the Exalted One or not, they do not want to be the people who tease stuff that they can't deliver. Like, they've said that. I would like
so
to see...
So it'll be interesting. Like, what if Matt Hardy comes in and they try to recruit him and he doesn't want to be in the Dark Order? Like, what if that's the story to bring him in?
I could also be interesting. Maybe he has a broken family who feud with the Dark Order. Maybe he is the Exalted One. But, like, there's a segment, I can tell you now because it's far enough away. So there's a segment from 2007 in WWE, which I think is fucking great. And it's like a fake build thing. So it's when it's going to be the Battle of the Billionaires, Trump and Vince.
Okay.
And Trump's got Bobby Lashley. Okay. And Vince has got Umaga. But the whole thing is there's going to be a guest referee. And Vince is like... You know,
is it Shane?
Well, no, so Vince is like, I want to see who this is guest referee. And out comes Eric Bischoff, who hadn't been in the company for a couple of years. It's like a fake tease. Could it be Bischoff? It's not Bischoff. Then I think the next one was Mick Foley. He comes out. It's not Mick Foley. And then Shane comes out to kind of be like, Dad, like, you don't want to know. And he's like, tell me who it is. And he's like, you don't want to know. He's like, tell me. And Shane whispers it to him. And as Shane whispers who the referee is, the glass breaks.
Okay, I was like,
and
is it
Austin?
Austin? I couldn't remember who.
But that is the perfect way to use a couple of swerves, Foley and Bischoff, who are good, solid swerves, mm-hmm. and then have Shane deliver the message, and you're building it all up because it's going to be, and then the glass breaks. And this is a thing that WWE used to do a lot. And AEW, to me, a lot of times feels like when WWE were great, like the kind of stuff that they do, the chaos, the controlled chaos that makes sense and stuff. So I hope that when they do the Dark Order Exalted One review, I hope we get a couple of fake teases. Like, bring Raven in for the night to, like, pretend that it might be Raven because people are banging on it being Raven.
Like, yeah, because he was, like, in the background of one of the segments.
Get fucking Jake Roberts to do something. Do you know what I mean? Like,
not?
Get use people. So I hope that they go all out with just making that nuts.
Brody Lee.
Yeah, that's Brody Lee. We got the sit-down interview with Kenny Omega.
He has cult experience, I'm just saying.
He would be good. He can bring his big mallet.
No.
Kenny Omega, Hangman Page, and the Young Bucks do this interview. It is great. Like, the Young Bucks cave, and, like, Nick Jackson at one point, he goes, you know, you're a jobber in Ring of Honor. We brought you on being elite, made you a star. And Omega's trying to be the kind of middle ground guy. And Page has a point because they are kind of, they always do kind of like, why have you brought a drink? And, you know, they're always on at him for something. He's like,
I didn't want to mention it, but why do you have a drink with you? Nah, nah, nah. Being the elitist.
Yeah,
much.
The elitists. That's a great tagline for them. But like, Page has got a point, and Page is like, I tried to leave. You guys wouldn't let me. And it rose and rose and rose. JR asked the right questions. JR was like, why are you uncomfortable, Paige? Why do you look so uncomfortable?
He's like, you're fidgeting. What's going on? And he's like, they're dicks. Like, he didn't just say that they're dicks, but basically, they're dicks. They're dicks to him. And he's just like, he's trying to do a thing, and he finally won a tag team championship that means everything to him because it's his first title in AEW, and it's like, it's a very big deal for him to be a tag team champion in AEW right now. It's a prestigious prize, right? And the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega are just like, you know, yeah, we're going to face each other. That's all part of the business. And the Young Bucks are like, yeah, we've lost enough sleep over that, so we're going to have a match with our pals, whatever, whatever. They're not treating it seriously. They're not treating it like it's that important to them. They're not treating it like it is the most important thing in their lives. And then when Adam Page is getting a bit salty at the Young Bucks trying to take the thing that he just won that he loves, they're like, it's just part of the business. And he's like, no, I care about this thing. My drink's empty. I'm leaving. I'm so on Adam Page's side. I love him.
It was brilliant. It was brilliant. So yeah, they really set up the tag match so well.
It is interesting that it's like kind of Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks versus Adam Page, but Kenny Omega has to be Adam Page's partner, and like there's a lot of drama and tension there.
And so the main event segment was the weigh-in. They brought in Gary Michael Capetta from WCW, like early 90s WCW, who, by the way, was great here. He just was an absolute trip the whole time. We've got Jericho shouting at Capetta. He said, you're the reason WCW are out of business. and he then apologizes as if he was. So basically it all comes down to
I love it. He's like, yep, it was my fault.
Yeah, he took full ownership. So Jericho shouts that he shouldn't be going first, so Moxley goes first. He goes on and does his way in. And then Jericho makes it like he's going to do it. And then he takes the mic, told Kansas City to shut their ass. He basically is jawjacking at Moxley. And then Moxley headbutts him. Big brawl. We've got Dustin Rhodes coming out. He goes and fights with Hager. And then my favorite line of the whole fucking show was... during the break, when the women were coming down for the segment, right?
Yeah, so like, why did they have to do that? Like, why do they have to have, like, ladies in bikini? I understand that it's supposed to make it feel like UFC, but, like, it's the same thing when they just had a lady sitting on a lifeguard stand. I was like, what's the point of this? Why?
I think the idea is to do it as the UFC countdown show, but I don't think the JR had been briefed on, like, what's happening. So the women are walking down during the break, and JR just goes, holy shit, what's that? And then gets told he's on air. Nothing else. Don't eat anything else. It's so good. I live for JR not knowing he's live.
Yep.
But anyway, so then later on, Rhodes and Hager are fighting in the concession stand outside, and then they're fighting at the Dippin' Dots. I've never heard of Dippin' Dots, but they're fighting there. And JR goes, no, not the Dippin' Dots! Dead. Died.
It was great.
Then Darby Allin comes out. He's fighting with Guevara and Santana Ortiz. It comes down to
Sammy written on a skateboard.
Yeah, exactly. Like naming his victim. And then
he's
Jericho.
Like Alexander Rusev and his boards.
The exact same thing. And then Jericho hits Moxley with the Judas effect. Then does the paradigm shift onto the scale on Moxley, and Jericho puts his foot on Moxley and poses with the title belt. This is how you do a go home show.
This was so fun. And you know how I am with shenanigans, right? Like when everything ends up in a brawl, sometimes it works for me and sometimes it doesn't. This is an instance where it worked for me because I knew all of the characters and I knew why they were fighting. And they all had a common link together, right? Like all of the people who are fighting against the Inner Circle, because the Inner Circle are a dastardly baddie faction that I do not like. And even if they are delightful coming out in their tracksuits for their entrance. But boo them. Boo Le Champion. He is a dickhead, right? And I want to see him get his ass kicked by John Moxley, and I'm so excited about it. And I'm so excited for Darby Allin versus Sammy Guevara. I am so ridiculously beside myself excited for Dustin Rhodes versus Jake Hager, Kenny. Like, I am looking forward to that match a great deal. How?
Do you know how? Because they have built the story for months.
Yeah.
Jake Hager debuted on October 2nd. He has not wrestled one time for the company. He has been Jericho's bodyguard the whole time. He helped fuck Dustin Rhodes' arm. But then when Dustin Rhodes came back, he went after Guevara first. So they kept him away from each other for a little while. It's just really clever writing. And like, you know, yeah, it's just really concise, clear storytelling. There's not a lot of holes in it that you can poke. And, you know, it's a seven-match card where all seven matches feel I mean, Nyla Rose and Chris Statlander does feel kind of thrown together, but like, you know, she's the women's champion. She's going to defend the title. Like, you know, that is going to be there. But the other six matches are all very well built matches with like deep stories. So,
Yeah, because I mean, like the women's division, we talked about it. It's not being built great. Like they need to work on that a significant deal. But in the men's division, AEW has really found its stride and building characters and using them really intelligently. Like I said, I'm really excited for Orange Cassidy versus PAC. Like I genuinely think it might be the match I'm most excited about just because people don't expect Orange Cassidy to be as good as he is, and I just like I'm really excited for the world to see that. But Orange Cassidy hasn't had a singles match yet, right?
Nope.
And he's been around and he's been such an interesting character and he's been such a good part of the show, but he hasn't had a singles match yet, so people haven't seen him. Jake Hager, same thing. Like, he's been the dude in the background who hasn't had a singles match, hasn't wrestled. And so when he can, and he's good. Like, obviously, I remember Jack Swagger versus Alexander Rusev being a feud that I liked because Jack Swagger was actually a good wrestler, right? He's very much up my alley in terms of that amateur wrestling style, and also he's a big dude. So I'm excited for Jake Hager versus Dustin Rhodes because I think it's going to be real good because I just think it is, and I think the story's been brilliant, and I think the division makes sense, and it's kind of a lovely place to be. Wrestling's cool. Wrestling's the best.
And you know, I'm a guy who watches WWE. I really enjoy WWE. I enjoy AEW. But what I would say is, if you're somebody who was very annoyed by Goldberg and The Fiend, and you like both, like WWE and AEW, the best thing you can do to try and make sure this kind of stuff doesn't happen as much is buy Revolution, put money into that. If there's AEW and NXT, watch AEW live. Do that one. Get them the rating, because it's only going to be through the other company doing really well that WWE are going to have to sort of not take their audience for granted as much. And I think they did take their audience for granted at Super Showdown, and then they have to work hard to get the audience back, which is just it's the process that we go through. So yeah, that's what I would recommend, kind of putting your time, because shouting about it on Twitter is not going to change anything, sadly.
No, it's not. I mean, it's kind of screaming into a void. And it's, I mean, Twitter seems pretty united in that it was bullshit, right? Like, there are some people who are like, hey, Goldberg beating The Fiend was great. Fair enough, if that's what you think, I suppose. Like, I disagree, but whatever, it's fine. But I think WWE's main problem is the same thing I've been yelling about since 2015 with the Undertaker Bray Wyatt situation, was like, you know, my first big, like, heartbreak moment where I was just, like, beside myself, angry at this company. Like, they don't care. And having a company that has, you know, their actual in real life authority figures, right? Like Triple H is an authority in the company. Like Stephanie McMahon has a position in the company. And having those people be dicks to their audience on and off screen is not really going to foster brand loyalty and keep people watching. So I think AEW has done well to kind of harness that dissatisfaction that a lot of people have toward WWE and that mistrust that people have in WWE. Like, let's not forget, AEW is not an independent company, you guys. Like, it is another billion-dollar company. But they've done better to make you feel a part of it and like you're part of its growth. And even though that's like a clever marketing ploy, and I know we're probably just being manipulated by them, like, at least it feels better.
Everybody manipulates. It's just how they do it.
Exactly.
Okay, well, listen, that's it for us. Sandra, what are the plugs, please?
You can follow me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Follow Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. If you want to hear a lot of Revolution analysis with Kenny and David, which I'm actually quite excited to listen to, and bonus content with Kenny and Finn, you'll get an ITR overrun with me talking about SmackDown this week. That's going to be a thing. We'll see how that goes. But yeah, tons of bonus content on patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, and that helps us keep do what we're doing here. youtube.com/InsideTheRopes for video interviews, clips from our live events, all sorts of good stuff there. insidetheropes.co.uk/tickets to get tickets to our live events, including shows with Kenny Omega in April and Kevin Owens in March. It's very exciting.
Lovely stuff. Also, I did do a guest spot on the Pod of Thunder. The initial plan at the beginning was for it to be on the free feed as a teaser. That lasted 4 minutes. I mean, it was my fault.
Shocking
It
that.
was my fault, so I can't really blame anybody else. But it
I
was very
know.
fun to look back at Starrcade 98 and, you know, a pretty big show where Goldberg got shafted. So the parallel. So yeah, check that out if you get the chance. So we'll be back on Sunday on Patreon, and on the main feed here, we'll be back on Tuesday or Wednesday with AEW Revolution and Raw Chat. So thanks for listening, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Perfect. Cool. I'll let you go. And let me know. Well, so Sunday, ideally, if we could do about maybe like 5:30 would be good, if possible. Or 6. I'm going out for Jen's birthday to ICW.
Okay.
So I just need to be gone by 7-ish.
Okay.
So 5:30 would be ideal, if possible.
Okay. Yeah, I should be able to do that.
Cool. Okay. Have a good evening, and I will talk to you soon.
All right. Sounds good. Bye.
Bye. You are innocence personified, and I will track you down and sell.